I think it's always better to have spikes or show spikes than just being the well-rounded package. It's better to be really good in some things than try to be relatively good in all the things.
Welcome back to 40 Minute Mentor, the podcast on a mission to raise aspirations and inspire the next generation of category-defining founders. From purpose-led entrepreneurs to world-class investors and Olympians, you'll learn firsthand from today's successful leaders on what it takes to be brilliant, all in just 40 minutes. Today, we're joined by Peter Specht, general partner at Creandum, one of the leading early-stage VCs with origins in Stockholm and now offices in London, San Francisco, and Berlin. Following an impressive early career at Rocket Internet, Google, and Bain, Peter joined Creandum as an investment manager in 2017, as the firm's first hire in the DACH region, building out its Berlin hub. He's since led the firm's entry into the Spanish market and has progressed rapidly to become a general partner, now based in London. Peter primarily focuses on investing into SaaS and B2B marketplaces, with notable investments into Factorial, Car on Sale, Cargo One, and TimberHub, to name a few. With such a wealth of experience across various markets, I am super excited to welcome Peter for our final VC feature episode for this series. So, Peter, a big welcome to 40 Minute Mentor. Thank you so much for joining us. How are things?
Hey, James. Thanks for having me. Things are good. Had a good morning today, and it starts even better with speaking with you now.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, the sun is shining where I am, and you've already had a good morning, so this is bound to be a fantastic conversation. And I'm really keen for our listeners to get to know you a bit better. So we'll start with a few quick fire questions to get you warmed up. So please finish the following sentences after me. Number one, the deal I am most proud of is.
Oof. Of course, there's many, but if I have to pick, I'll pick the most advanced one, which is a company called Factorial HR Software. Creandum led the seed round 5 years ago, and it's today a unicorn out of Barcelona, over 1,000 people, an extremely impressive journey so far. It's not the end of the journey, though.
Yeah. Oh, wow. What an investment to make. And that's incredible to hear. Thank you for sharing. I wish I could have invested in.
Ooh. I can spend a lot of time on this question and name many here, but let's make it quick. One company is a company called Enpal. It's a startup in the solar renewable energy space. We looked at the Series A back then and spent time. Unfortunately, made the wrong call, I would say. And it's now in a category leading position currently in a space that has evolved with a lot of tailwind. Valued over valued a few billion, and so it's definitely an interesting one.
The one that got away. Oh, well, fair enough. I guess there'll always be one of those, won't there?
Always. You cannot get around.
Indeed. Number three, a myth I'd like to bust about VC is?
That all VCs are all into number crunching. I think in particular in the early stage, there's so much about people, interpersonal, and gut feeling. And I think sometimes VC has a wrong perception there.
Yeah, that's so true. We had Eileen Burbidge on the podcast recently, and she was saying exactly the same thing about the connection and the people piece being just so important. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. The hardest part of being in VC is?
For me, it's probably prioritization. There is an endless amount of startups to look at. Ideally, I would love to look at all, but you can also only spend a certain amount on a certain number of companies, and you can always spend even more time with your portfolio or your network. So finding the right balance here on a daily basis is probably my constant challenge.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of other investors listening to this will relate, and perhaps in the rest of this conversation we could dig into what it is that helps sort of define what from the great from the good when you're making those decisions. And finally, the one thing I'd like to change about VC is
to make it less FOMO driven and more thesis and conviction driven.
Love that. Amazing. Well, I'm sure we'll come on to talk a bit more about your own thesis and the things that you're particularly excited about. But before we dig into Creandum, I'd love to learn a bit more about your backstory, if you don't mind, Peter. So do you mind telling our audience a bit about your upbringing and what were your early career aspirations?
If I start really early, I think I knew I wanted to go into the business world from probably age 16 onwards. Before that, I was more into sports and basketball and football and these kind of things. But I think at that time, I developed an interest into all things around economics, stock markets, and spent, you know, more time with reading into them and understanding them. I have a brother who is 3 years older than me. He was at that time also starting to study business in St. Gallen. And I think that was always an inspiration to me. And so ultimately, that's the path I went down as well, to study business. I mean, today I wish probably that I had studied engineering, but it was for me the right path and way. And I think that that laid sort of like my foundation interest in sort of like the whole business world, which for me started as a mix in between the, you know, the startup world and then consulting and a few other things.
Yeah, you've had a really interesting and varied career before moving into VC. You worked at Rocket Internet, at a venture called Lazada, launching and building Thailand's largest e-commerce company in Bangkok, which must have been a fascinating experience. You've obviously seen big tech at Google in Hamburg and top-tier consulting at Bain. So, you know, stellar brands there. What stands out most from those sort of formative years? Were there particular reasons why you made the various decisions you did? And yeah, I'd love to just learn about some of those learnings.
I mean, for me, especially early in my professional life, it was important to see many different things. I think you grow with various experiences and not only seeing the same thing over a longer time. And I think the best way to see different things is early on in career, and then you specialize later on. And so I followed a bit, you know, spontaneous opportunities. So, you know, getting into tech, for example, my story was I was doing an internship at one of the consultancy firms, and basically a friend of mine called me and said, "Hey, you know, Rocket Internet is starting Lazada in Thailand. I'm moving over. You should meet the founder and talk to the Rocket Internet guys." And I said, "Hey, that sounds pretty cool." 2012, you know, e-commerce in Thailand was just emerging. So it was like a very interesting topic for me. And I jumped on the call, and basically an hour later, the founder said like, "Hey, you know, I want to hire you, but you need to be here in 10 days. Can you quit your internship and start in 10 days and move to Bangkok?" And fortunately, I said yes to this opportunity and convinced sort of like the people at my internship back then that it's a better use for my time or even a bigger experience for me. And so I think that was a little bit of the approach I took in the early days of getting into, you know, job and work life, to see things and really be curious to explore.
Yeah, I love that. I think curiosity is just such an important thing at the beginning of your career. And they always say fortune favors the brave, and you definitely took a bold, brave call to hop on that plane to the other side of the world. While you were at Lazada, you saw that company grow incredibly rapidly. I think you were sort of 15 people in an internet coffee shop to over 250. What was that experience like? And what were some of the sort of most important lessons you learned from being a part of such a rapid, high growth scaling startup?
For context, this was back in 2012. I was just right out of uni. So I basically knew nothing, I would say, but I was really eager and willing to work very hard. And I think it was a special experience because it was the early days of e-commerce in Southeast Asia. So Lazada was basically the Amazon model for Southeast Asia that Rocket Internet set up there. But it's completely different problems from what we saw to some of the e-commerce players in Europe or the US in an emerging market, where, for example, there was a lack of credit card penetration. And the question mark was like, how can people pay? So you had to have delivery options like cash on delivery. And actually, most people paid in cash. Or there were no proper addresses. When you get an order and the address field says the third door behind the 7-Eleven shop on a certain street. And I mean, these kind of things were just so real and like hands-on to solve that it was like a very interesting situation, let's say like that. But I think the lessons I took really away were probably how to not do some things. I think my biggest lesson was probably around speed of scaling. We scaled way too fast. We started with 10 people in an internet coffee shop. Some of them were, you know, very young people like myself. And a few months later, we were 250 people in a 1,000 square meter office. And basically, everything was about speed. We interviewed people within 30 minutes, hired them very fast, etc. And the result of it was that we mishired quite a lot. And after 4 or 5 months, we had reached that scale. But unfortunately, also had to let go 30% of the organization due to, you know, struggles in culture, overhiring, and more of these problems that come with it. So it was simply not a sustainable way to scale. And I think having seen that is probably a key thing I took away, and also on like how to not do some things. But it's also fair to say that ultimately it worked quite well for Lazada. It got sold a few years later to Alibaba for a few billion. So they certainly were successful with their approach and you know, had a great outcome here. But some interesting takeaways along the way.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess that experience and particularly that piece around the importance of getting hiring right and at the right pace, I'm sure has been handy when advising early stage founders and their own sort of hiring strategies. You had aspirations one day to build a business, but you've ultimately ended up in VC. So what was it about investing that ultimately got you hooked? And why did you eventually end up at Creandum? Was there something particular that stood out about it?
I think I probably got the hook of investing during my time at Bain. So after basically having my stint at Rocket Internet and spending some time at Google, I saw the differences between, you know, a very fast moving startup, speed, agility, and then seeing you know, something different in tech, which was Google 10 years ago, which was, you know, great culture, but like very big organization, very cumbersome in processes. When it took me 2 days to change a process in a startup, it took 3 months to change it at Google. And I just realized, you know, it's not big tech as, or like big corporates are not for me. And the and then I joined Bain, and the work there taught me a lot of my analytical and due diligence skill set. And I was doing, for most of my time over the 2.5 to 3 years that I spent there, I was doing due diligences for PE funds. So very analytical work, spending a lot of time on very like boring but profitable markets and companies. And I think that shaped my mindset of potentially becoming an investor. But I always knew I wanted to go back to tech and to the startup world. And I think it's the mix, the combination of both that ultimately dragged me into it.
Amazing, amazing. And feels like a great time to properly introduce Creandum for our listeners that might not know it. It's obviously a very prestigious firm, but for anyone that isn't familiar with it, do you mind sharing a little bit more about what Creandum's origin story is, the firm's thesis, a bit more about why you joined?
For sure. I mean, Creandum is a pan-European early-stage VC based out of London, Berlin, Stockholm, and San Francisco. We focus on seed and Series A. We're the first and early backers of over $20 billion companies, such as, you know, Spotify, Klarna, Trade Republic, Depop, Plio, Factorial. As you can see, a mix between both B2C as well as B2B companies. Every sixth company that Creandum invested in became a billion-dollar company. So very focused on, you know, high conviction and concentrated investing. Its origin, Creandum's origin originally was in the Nordics. So the company was founded more than 20 years ago in Stockholm, but today really has a global setup. I'm based in London. Many of my colleagues are in Berlin and in Stockholm as well as in San Francisco. And we tried to meet founders very early and try to back them early and then support them very long term, do the full cycle, and be like very active and involved investors.
Yeah. And your track record as a fund really speaks for itself based on the number of unicorns and successes you've had. You joined as one of the first hires in the DACH region. So do you mind sharing a bit about what that was like for you, your sort of first foray into VC, and how that experience of growing the Berlin office really has sort of shaped you as an investor?
Yeah. I joined close to 7 years ago. At that time, Creandum just had opened the German office, the Berlin office. We had made a few investments in Germany before, and Creandum hired my colleague Simon. He used to be at another German VC before called Earlybird. And I actually met him before in my Rocket Internet times. And I think in the early days, it was venture 7 years ago was slightly different today than today. In the sense, there's less venture funds, less speed, less velocity, less interesting or like less amount of deals around. And in the early days, it was, I think what I was intrigued by is like Creandum already had sort of like a lot of investments across Europe, but not so many in Germany at that time. And it was really about building out the Creandum brand locally as well in Germany, building out local presence, getting to know all sort of like the seed, pre-seed, angels, and these people in an ecosystem that really make you deeply ingrained. And I think in the first days there, like I I often pitched, like, who is Creando? I'm like, hey, I've never heard of you guys. Like, have you done something in Germany yet? And over the years, this completely changed, and Creando backed many extremely successful companies in the German-speaking region. And I think seeing that journey or being part of it was, I think, something I valued, as it was not just sort of like the VC, being on the VC side, but also like a little bit like running a small startup and trying to make it bigger.
Yeah. And I guess you can relate even more so to founders when you're trying to build your own brand and a presence in a market. I find it interesting that you were there to kind of build a presence in Berlin. You helped with the entry into the Spanish market. You're now in London. So how have you continually adapted to all these different markets? And I think you might have spent time in San Francisco, if I'm not wrong as well. So you've definitely traversed the globe. How have you adapted to the different market conditions, the cultures? Would love to learn for anyone else that might be embarking on a similar type of sort of journey.
Totally. I mean, maybe for background, I mean, like, why have I been moving around, or like, why do we have, you know, offices in many different places? We strongly believe in sort of like multi-local presence and having like a strong geographical coverage and reach really among the earliest stages. And to do that, you need to have boots on the ground across the key tech ecosystems in Europe, but also in the US, where we really want to provide sort of like operational support also for founders. And in particular, in the early stage, at pre-seed, seed, and these kind of things, it's often best done locally. And so this, we at Creando decide to have the operational pain of being based in like four offices and doing our team meetings kind of like hybrid or remote versus, you know, all sitting in one office, for example, in London, and being face to face all the time. But we think it's really important in the early stages to be locally present as well, but likewise have sort of like the global angle. And for me, this has been more opportunistically that over the past years at Creando, there has been, you know, the chance of like, hey, Peter, you started in Germany, but why don't you come to Stockholm for half a year and work more with some of the partners there? And I think it's always really important to learn from different people. So I moved over 6 months there. In 2019, I had the chance to go to San Francisco and be in our office there and get to know the local ecosystem better there. So whenever there was the opportunity to explore, get to know new environments, I just took it. And my approach to it is you have to be, of course, always really open-minded, curious, but also I would say have some structure to it. So when I moved to San Francisco, I wrote a list of like, hey, these are 50 companies I want to meet people in. And these were both VCs, but these were also, I want to have met a person from Netflix. I want to have met a person from Meta. I want to have met a person from Yelp, to have sort of like my network in the Valley and in the US when I moved back to Europe. So it was that mix of spontaneous curiosity and openness, and then some structured approach of what do you really want to get out of it, of that trip, besides, you know, having, you know, also fun and a great time in a different country.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, how deliberate that is. You mentioned the investment into Factorial, which is already a unicorn, as an amazing seed investment. You've clearly, Spain is an emerging tech scene, but, you know, with some fantastic recent successes, including that one. So I'd love to just get your perspective on how you're seeing that market develop over the years, and what particularly about Factorial was it that has made it the success it is today?
So I originally studied in Barcelona for my master's. And I then, when I joined Creando, I speak a little bit of Spanish. I thought it would be a great idea to look more into that market, because I think it has some of the ingredients that you really look for, which is some really great university and talent. It's a very sort of like young and vibrant scene. You have great living quality, actually, in cities like Barcelona that also attract a lot of international talent to live there. You have good technical universities, both in Barcelona and in Madrid. But still, it's an ecosystem that is, I would say, way behind things like London or France with Paris or Berlin or the Nordics with Stockholm. So I think all the ingredients are there, but it's simply a few years behind in terms of maturity and in terms of scale. And we saw a lot of that already change a little bit over the past, I would say, 5 years. And there's more seed funds now, more early stage capital. It's still lacking, you know, local growth capital and these things. But I think the general ingredients that you need for an interesting tech ecosystem are around. That said, there's sometimes, I think, the the biggest struggle when looking at companies from that region often is that many had built for local market, or we're building XYZ for Southern Europe, which then usually is smaller markets like Spain, Portugal, Italy, and not going after the real big markets either in Europe or in the US. And so whenever we looked into something there, we really look for the people with the ambition to go global or at least pan-European. And Factor Real was a company that clearly ticked that box when we first met Jordi and Bernat. And maybe the background there is Factor Real is a core HR platform, originally from Barcelona, but now operating in 8 different countries, over 1,000 employees. And the founders, Jordi, Bernat, and Pau, they were all executives, operators, and founders before. So two of them work in the Valley as CTO, as well as CTO and VP business development. So being executives before, Bernat had built a few companies himself before in Spain. And so it was this combination of like extremely strong entrepreneurs in an ecosystem that had true global ambitions and a really, really good and nicely designed product. It was addressing a big pain point. So in summary, everything we look for in a seed round. And so we decided to partner up back in 2018.
Fantastic. What a partnership it's been. Well, I wanted to talk a bit about London, of course, because you joined the London team and have had a great success over here. So do you mind sharing about why you made the move over here when you did? You've got this incredibly global view. How do you view the London ecosystem compared to the different markets that you've been in before?
I mean, in Europe, London is just a magnitude larger than some of the other ecosystems. This, I think, is both for the amount of startups that are here, but as well for the amount of capital that is here. I think over the past couple of years, it really crystallized that it will, and it is, the main hub for VC capital and funds looking at Europe. And that's also why, Creandum opened up an office here a couple of years back. We had done 10, 15 investments already here in the UK, but as I said, we believe in local presence and being there for the early stages. And so we opened up an office here. And comparing this to the other ecosystems, I would say there in Europe, compared to Europe, there's way, way more funds here. I think my best example is always when we threw an office opening party. We probably said, let's invite a lot of the local VCs here, angels and founders, etc. But then we looked at the list of VCs and we had 100 VCs on the invite list, and not like people, but like different VCs. And I was like, wow, it's that many VCs here. And this reminded me a little bit at my time in San Francisco, where you have a couple of hundred VCs, like even more, much more than in London. And everyone has kind of like a good story to share, like some like newer VCs, some like very established ones. But the ecosystem is just very, very deep. And London is not there. I hope we grow even bigger here in Europe and we get more and more to that scale at some point. But within Europe, I think there's definitely that effect of London being a magnitude bigger than something like Paris or Berlin.
For sure. You've backed some incredible companies as a fund here, Depop, Tide, more recently, the likes of Unitary AI, and many, many more. Would love to get your perspective on some of the portfolio over here, ones that you're particularly excited about, and get a sense of what your plans are for the year ahead.
We've been fairly active in recent times here in the UK as well. Last year, we made 5 new commitments here in the UK, both at seed as well as at Series A stage. You mentioned a few. And I think, I mean, looking at the areas that we invested in here, it has been, for example, health with a company like Lindus Health, which is doing clinical research. You mentioned Unitary, which is basically AI for making sure that, let's say, content platforms like Twitter and TikTok, etc., have compliant content on their platforms. There's things like Packfleet in the logistics space, or more recently also some not yet announced companies in the AI software space. And so it's a mix. Within our fund, there's people with different passions. Some are more passionate about fintech, some are more passionate about AI, about software, about healthcare. And so there always comes out a mix of companies we backed in. One of them, for example, being Fuse Energy, so something more in the in the climate energy space, which was founded by ex-Revolut leadership people. And so I would say a good mix that reflects our generous nature.
And I know that you made general partner last year, an amazing achievement. You've had this kind of very fast trajectory, and there are going to be people listening to this in VC that want to emulate your success. So would love just to get your advice for them on your experience of rising through the ranks of VC. What did you do that's kind of got you further ahead, helped you progress quickly? And what advice would you have for others looking to progress their careers?
I think probably the most important thing for me was to learn from different people. So I was lucky here that at Creandum, some of the partners have been doing venture for 15 to 20 years. And so when I came in and had no clue, I could tag along and learn from them. I think the key thing was here, though, to not tag along with one person, but really, you know, tag into calls or in meetings with the different people and different partners here in the organization and learn from their different thinking and style. I think every investor has a slightly different skill set, slightly different strengths. And so taking as much exposure to different ones helps you develop your own style and getting good input. So I think this was probably the key one for me. The second one, I always spent a lot of time with is really thinking about not getting rushed in that sense, but being patient and selective. I think as a VC, especially early on, you're always thinking of like, I should do a deal, or like, I need to do some deals and build up my track record. I think the right way to think about it is always that it's better to do no deal and then do one that you're really convinced about than just doing some to follow that urge. And I think there it's like really be patient, listen sort of like to your inner self when you really feel 100% conviction, and then leaning in very heavily on those. Because as a young investor, when you're building your career path, I think there's sort of like different forces that pull you in different directions.
For sure. No, it's fantastic advice. And obviously this is 40 Minute Mentors. So Creandum's mentorship system, where each different people get in mentorship at different stages by partners, I think is a really wonderful thing, and clearly great advice for other VCs sort of progressing through their careers to go out and actively seek that mentorship. I guess on the other side of things, there are going to be lots of people listening to this that want to move into VC, which is notoriously a difficult move to make. You've got to be very deliberate about it. So I wanted to ask your advice for someone that successfully made that move. What are your tips for anyone kind of sort of embarking on that, and anything that you would encourage them to think about or do before they start applying?
It's exposing yourself sort of like to the venture and the tech world. So either spend good amount of time in like tech startups combined with some sort of like analytical roles, or also make sure that you maybe spent a little bit of time in venture before. Do an internship in venture. So I don't know, if you, for example, studied, use the opportunity to apply for a 3 months internship or 6 months internship at various VC firms. I think gaining that knowledge at an early stage will allow you to come back at a later point in time. While, full-time positions don't pop up the whole time at VCs, there are sort of different ways to gain a little bit of the ins and gain some more network there. And so I would actually try to do that. So like work in great startups, try to expose yourself to VCs, ideally do maybe an internship at some point, and then build up your network in the space as well. It's very much about knowing who's hiring and when, and getting in touch at the right point in time. And that's what I would focus on. The other thing is, if you want to go into VC, think about this as a 1 to 2 year journey, sort of like to get in. Because it's very rare that you just say like, okay, now I want to quit my job and I want to join VC. Because not so many funds might or hire at that point in time. And we, for example, probably last time we added someone in investment team was in an entry position was 1.5 years ago. And so it just doesn't happen all the time and frequently. And so make sure you have enough time to be there when funds are actually open for new positions.
Yeah, that's really, really great advice. You need to be patient, just like investors do to see the returns. You know, there's that delayed gratification from backing seed stage companies that become hopefully unicorns, but it's similar when it comes to moving into VC. Great advice, Peter. Thank you. Before we get to our wrap-up questions, given the macro climate, be remiss of me not to ask you, on behalf of other founders listening, about fundraising, about ways that people can impress you if they're pitching to you. So I'd love to start by just focusing in on the sorts of businesses that you really love backing. What is it that you see in a pitch deck or in a founder that for you makes an absolute no-brainer to invest in?
I think the first thing is to tick the boxes, always address very large markets and big problems. The second thing is stand out as a founder. And I think it's always better to have spikes or show spikes than just being the well-rounded package. It's better to be really good in some things than try to be relatively good in all the things. And then really show a unique insight. Like, why are you building this company? And if sort of like not all your friends would go into startup, like what is your intrinsic motivation and urge to make this solution for a certain market and to make the world better in this point or to solve problems in a certain area? And really look for these sort of like unique insights and motivation behind starting and building a company. And then it's ultimately also a good preparation of like being able to deliver a very good pitch, like take the time to rehearse it and really work on it with some angels or friends or entrepreneur friends that you can iterate the pitch on and just make sure that you are well practiced actually when you go and talk to VCs. It pays off.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And do you see a kind of consistent characteristics amongst the best founders that you've backed? Do you see very similar traits in their personalities or things that they have all got? Or is it very different depending on the company?
I would say the common trait of, I think, founders that I work with is having those spikes. I think many of them extraordinary good in something. Not in all things, but in something. Sometimes a bit crazy or special. And I actually think that's a good thing. You need to be a bit crazy to start your own company and try to go all in.
Yeah, I can admit to that. We're all a bit crazy. Anyone that just sort of voluntarily goes on the crazy roller coaster that is entrepreneurship. Yeah, you've got to be a little bit unhinged. Brilliant. Before we get to the wrap up, I just wanted to ask your perspectives on the industries or markets or areas that you are most excited about in 2024, just so we can kind of put that in the minds of any aspiring founders that are thinking about starting a business. What are you particularly looking forward to and who do you want to hear from?
I mean, as mentioned, we're spending a lot of time along our six verticals, which is, you know, consumer, B2B SaaS, dev tool and infra, fintech, climate and health. And developing sort of like sub-thesis in all of those verticals. So anyone that has really like strong and large ambitions building in one of those areas, we would love to talk to, see how we can help and potentially be a partner for you. I personally do a lot of software and a bit of B2B marketplaces. So these are the areas I constantly iterate on and think about.
Fantastic. Thank you, Peter. Well, we're sadly at an end. We've got three final wrap-up questions. So firstly, what is the best piece of career advice that you've ever been given that you'd like to pass on to our listeners?
Early in your career, seek out the things that you haven't done yet. So don't look for the tasks where you're really good in that you have done before, but seek the tasks that are new for you and try to do them.
Wise words. Thank you. And what are you personally most excited about in the year ahead?
For me, it's always meeting early stage founders. I think that's the best thing about the job. And every year I go into it and really look forward to meet as many as possible and do that in exciting areas. I mean, right now for me, it's a lot of things in the AI and software related space. So if you're building anything there, really eager to chat.
Love that. And finally, this is 40 Minute Mentor. So if you could be mentored by anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Kobe. Kobe Bryant is I think, unparalleled in dedication, and I wish he could be a mentor. I mean, he comes from the sports world, so but I think he has really shown what true dedication and hard work means.
Yeah, amazing. I think that's the first time, but he's a true inspiration. I had the real pleasure of seeing him play at the 2012 Olympics. And it was an absolute joy to behold. So thank you for sharing that, Peter. It's been a real pleasure. I'm a big admirer of the work Creandum do. And I'm really grateful that we've had a chance to hear your mentorship and career story and so many great bits of advice for our listeners. So thank you very much. And I wish you all the very best for the year ahead.
Likewise, James. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. And that is all from us today. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. We really hope you enjoyed it even half as much as we enjoyed recording it. If you're a new listener and haven't left us feedback before, we would really appreciate it if you did. We'd love to hear what you love most about 40 Minute Mentor and how you think we can make it even better. So if you have 30 seconds after this episode, I'd be so grateful if you could head to ratethispodcast.com/40mm and leave us a rating and review. You can also leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. As always, if we've left any questions unanswered in today's episode, or if you have any suggestions for future episodes, then please do let our head of marketing, Hannah, know. Thank you so much again for all your support, and I hope to see you next Wednesday for even more pocket-sized mentorship.